Good evening, everyone. Dr. Weldon McWilliams, I'm your host, and this is The Gist of Freedom. We'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, and tonight our guest is the great-great-grandson of Frederick Douglass. We have with us this evening Dr. Kenneth Morris. Dr. Morris, are you with us?
I am, yes. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming, and thank you for being with us and sharing your story with us this evening. If you can, just tell our listeners a few things about yourself and some things you have going on right now.
Well, absolutely. I'll start off with my relationship to Frederick Douglass, and just so your listeners know, there is one more great added to the introduction that you gave me, so it makes me all the greater. I am the great-great-great-grandson of Frederick Douglass, and I also happen to be the great-great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. And just the way the families came together happened on my mom's side. My grandfather was Frederick Douglass III, and he was Frederick Douglass's great-grandson. And my grandmother was Nettie Hancock Washington, and she is Booker T. Washington's granddaughter. The two of them met in 1941 at Tuskegee, which is the school that Booker T. Washington founded in 1881. And they were walking across campus, and they literally bumped into each other, didn't realize that the other descended from an historic family. They fell in love at first sight, and they wound up getting married 3 months later. So I guess you can say that that meeting, that fateful meeting, was meant to be. My mom was an only child, Nettie Washington Douglass, so when she married my father, and I was born, I was the first male to unite the bloodlines of the family. So that's the way the two families came together.
Wow, so they came together on Tuskegee Institute, and were they familiar with their lineage at the time?
Yeah, absolutely. We've always known in the family that we are descendants of these great American heroes. And if you think about it, Frederick Douglass III, my grandfather, was Frederick Douglass's great-grandson. So I'm sure that your listeners out there probably at some point in their life knew a grandparent, and some of them may have even known a great-grandparent. And even with all of those greats, you know, it sometimes makes me feel very far removed, but I love to tell the story about my great-grandmother, Fanny Douglass, whom I was very close to. She lived to be 101 years old, and she lived well into my 20s. She actually met Frederick Douglass when she was a little girl. And my Aunt Portia, who lived to be 95, and I was also very close to her, she was Booker T. Washington's daughter. So I remember being a little boy and sitting on my great-grandmother Fanny Douglass's lap, and she would tell me firsthand stories about Frederick Douglass, and she used to call him the man with the great big white hair. And I remember sitting on my Aunt Portia's lap, and she would tell me firsthand stories about her father, Booker T. Washington. And when I stopped to think that hands that actually touched the great Frederick Douglass and hands that touched the great Booker T. Washington also touched mine, in a sense, even with all of those greats, I can say that I stand just one person away from history. So my grandparents and my great-grandparents, of course they knew about the connection to both Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington. It would be like in any family how you know, these stories would be passed down from generation to generation.
That's great, great. Now, I can just imagine your family library must be big and amazing. Have you come across any artifacts, any primary resources from the two gentlemen, Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington?
Yes, and I'll go back to you know, my earliest remembrance of, you know, knowing about this incredible lineage was when I was 5 years old. And in my great-grandmother Fanny's house, she had this larger-than-life portrait of Frederick Douglass that was at the top of the staircase. And I remember being a little boy and walking up those steps and looking at that picture. And, you know, we all know these photographs of Frederick Douglass, these historic photographs, and he always had this very serious, stern look. And I remember being a little boy and wanting to try and sneak past that photograph, but I could feel his eyes following me as I would sneak past and try and make my way down that long, dark hall. And this, I spent many a summer in Frederick Douglass's retirement home, which is on the Chesapeake Bay, just outside of Annapolis, in Maryland. It's the home where my great-great-grandfather, Charles, who was Frederick Douglass's youngest son, he built the home for his father so that he could have a place to retire on the Chesapeake Bay, and he could sit at the top of the house and look back across the water, and on the other side he could see land, and that land is where he once toiled in chains as a slave. He was born Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey on the eastern shore of Maryland. So I grew up with all kinds of artifacts around me. As I mentioned, I spent my summers in Frederick Douglass's house, so it was kind of hard to get away from it. Another very memorable artifact that we had in the family was Abraham Lincoln's favorite walking stick. And when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, Mary Todd Lincoln gave this walking stick to Frederick Douglass as a token of their friendship, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk a little bit about the relationship between Douglass and Lincoln. So that walking stick was in my family, and I used to take that to school for show and tell. So these artifacts were all around us.
Right. And any particular artifacts from Booker T. Washington from that side?
We have letters and photographs. My cousin Margaret, who passed away a couple of years ago, was the oldest living granddaughter of Booker T. Washington, and she lived in Atlanta, and I spent many hours in her house going through all of these old photographs and letters, and again, the same types of things that other families would have. It just so happens that these artifacts belong to these two great American heroes.
Great. Now, there's a street named in his honor in New York City, and it's the first place he landed in New York, so it's the Frederick Douglass Landing, correct?
Yes, Frederick Douglass escaped from slavery in 1838, and he would go by boat, or excuse me, by train and then by boat, and the first place that he landed was in New York City, and there is a Frederick Douglass Boulevard and a Frederick Douglass Circle. And last September, I visited the city, and there was a statue that was unveiled for him, which is a beautiful memorial that is at 125th Street. It's at the northwest corner of Central Park.
Okay, great. Now, can you tell us, I guess, in coming to know more about Frederick Douglass, learning about him as an early age, did learning about Frederick Douglass and understanding that you were a blood relative of Frederick Douglass, how did that affect you, I guess, in your rearing?
As a young boy, I always knew that I descended from Douglass and Washington, but I never really celebrated it. You know, the few times that I did tell people of my relationship when I was younger, nobody ever believed me, and I never thought that it was a point worth arguing. And I spent most of my life really running away from this legacy. There was a lot of pressure that was put on the males in the family to be the next Frederick Douglass or to be the next Booker T. Washington. If you can imagine, that could be a pretty heavy weight to carry on your shoulders. And, you know, when you're younger and people don't believe you, when you tell them something, then you tend to get embarrassed about it and not want to talk about it. And this was the case for most of my life. And I like to say that I was really decisively disengaged from my heritage until I was well into my 40s. And sometimes it's embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to admit that, but that is the case.
Okay. And I guess looking at the two men in particular, Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, and I guess looking at their ideology, they were slightly different. What is your take on both of their ideologies?
Well, they came from different generations. Of course, they both were born slaves.
Right.
Frederick Douglass was a slave until he was 20 years old. Booker T. Washington was freed when he was 9 years old, when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed. So if you look at Frederick Douglass's legacy and his life story, and I'll just go through that, you know, quickly so that the listeners understand, who may not be familiar with his story. But he was born Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey on the eastern shore of Maryland. He was born to a black woman and a white man, and it was presumed that his father was his slave master, although he spent his whole life trying to prove the paternity, and he was never able to do that. He never had a pair of pants or shoes until he was 8 years old. He only saw his mother on three occasions his whole life, and that's because she lived on a plantation that was 12 miles away. So in order for her to see her son, she would work in the fields picking cotton from sunup to sundown, and then she would walk in the middle of the night 12 miles and spend just a few precious moments with her son until he fell asleep, and then she would have to walk back the 12 miles so that she could be back on the plantation by the time the sun came up, because if she wasn't, then she was most likely going to endure a beating, a whooping. And he used to sleep head first in a potato sack with his feet hanging out because it was the only way that he could try and keep warm. He was raised by his grandmother, and his grandmother's job was to raise the slave children on the plantation until they were old enough to really enter their life as a slave, and that's to start doing manual labor and hard work. And for that age was 6 years old. So when Frederick Douglass was six, his grandmother said, "We're going to go on a long journey." And that journey was a long walk to the main house, the main plantation. And if you can imagine this little boy who doesn't know his mother. In fact, his mother had passed away. She'd been dead a year before he was even told that she had passed away. And, of course, he wasn't allowed to go to her funeral. So his grandmother was really the only family that he knew, and now they're making this long journey. He's scared. He's clinging to her skirt. She's carrying him much of the way when his legs were too tired to walk himself. And then she would drop him off at the plantation, and he would never see his grandmother again. When he was 9 years old, he had what he called divine providence in his favor, and he was chosen from among all the slave children on the plantation to go to Baltimore to be the house servant for his master's brother, Hugh Auld. Now, this was an important time in his life because had he stayed on the eastern shore of Maryland on the plantation, he wouldn't have been in an environment where he would have been around other people that knew how to read and write because, of course, we know that it was illegal to teach a slave how to read and write. When he got to Baltimore, he would be in the big city, and he would be among free white children, of course, that knew how to read, and some free black children that would know how to read. And when he got to Baltimore, his slave mistress, Sophia, had never had a slave before. And she didn't know that it was illegal to teach a slave how to read and write, so she began to teach him how to read. But when her husband found out about it, he forbade it, and he said, "You cannot teach a slave how to read and write, because if you do, it will unfit him to be a slave." Now, that is a really important message that I hope your listeners caught that, because young Frederick caught it, and he realized that if he didn't want me to have this so badly, then I was going to do everything in my power to get it. And he realized that knowledge was power, and it would one day be his key to freedom. Now, I'm going to jump ahead because I know we don't have a lot of time, but he would go on to escape when he was just 20 years old. Booker T. Washington was also born a slave, but as I mentioned, he was freed when the Emancipation Proclamation was signed, and he was 9 years old. He wanted to go to school so badly that he worked in the salt and coal mines of West Virginia so that he could save enough money to enter school, and he would go on to Hampton Institute when he was just 16 years old. He would graduate, and he would start Tuskegee University, or what was called Tuskegee Normal School and then Tuskegee Institute, when he was just 25 years old. So as far as their philosophies, they came really from different generations. Frederick Douglass was about fighting for the abolition of slavery. He was the spokesman of the abolitionist movement, the leader. He published the leading voice of the movement, the North Star, out of Rochester, New York. And the abolitionists would go on to agitate and convince Abraham Lincoln to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing 4 million slaves in 1865. Now, Booker T. Washington would come along at a time when you had freed African Americans who were looking for an education, and he realized that he had to start from the basics with a lot of the students that he had at Tuskegee, and in some cases he had to teach them how to brush their teeth and tie their shoes. And then he would teach them a trade, give them a tool so that they could have a stake in the nation's growing economy. So while Frederick Douglass fought for the abolition of slavery, Booker T. Washington was the person that bridged the gap between the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation and the Civil Rights Movement. So that would explain the differences in their philosophies.
Right, right. Thank you for that. We thank you. And it's also what's good, and I hope what the listeners understand, is that both men at a certain period of time were seen as the premier leaders of the African-American community. In the time period that you mentioned, of course, during the abolitionist movement, Frederick Douglass was seen as basically the premier black leader, or the premier African-American leader amongst African-Americans. And at the same time, Booker T. Washington was also seen as this premier black leader during his era as well. So that makes the connection all the more interesting, in your relationship to these two men, all the more interesting. I wanted to kind of follow up on what you stated earlier when you stated that, you know, you kind of grew up maybe a little embarrassed or unsure or didn't feel like really discussing that relationship. So I wanted to know, at what point did you break out of this? At what point did you realize this is something that you should embrace and even talk about?
That's a great question. That happened really only about 5 years ago. And what changed in my life is that a friend of mine handed me a National Geographic magazine, and the cover story was 21st Century Slaves. And I looked at that headline, and it shocked me. And I reacted, as I think most people do, the first time they hear about the existence of human trafficking and modern-day slavery, and that slavery still exists. And as I started to research the issue, and I found that slavery still exists all over the world in every civilized and uncivilized country, including right here in the United States. And I started to think about this. And I have two girls, two daughters. And at the time that I read this article, they were 12 and 9 years old. And when I found that there were girls that were my daughters' ages and even younger that were forced to be sex slaves in the brothels of Southeast Asia, and that slavery still exists here in the United States in the form of teen prostitution, which is not even a term that I like to use, because no child makes a decision to sell themselves and to give all their money away to their pimps, or effectively what would be their slave masters. And when I had this information, and I found that here in the U.S. that the average age that a girl is forced into sex slavery is 13 years old. I remember my wife was putting my daughters to bed, and I was reading this article. It was nighttime, and I was in my living room, and I could hear my girls laughing in the next room. And I'm going back and forth from what I'm reading about this young girl that was forced to service men and to sell herself 20 to 25 times a day, and I'm listening to my girls laughing, and I'm thinking that's what young girls should be doing. They should be getting tucked safely into bed by their mother. So I put the magazine down, and I walked into their room to say goodnight to them, and I found that I couldn't look them in the eyes. And I realized at that moment that I had this platform that my ancestors had built through struggle and through sacrifice, and I could really leverage the historical significance of my ancestry to stand up and to do something about this issue. And how old a gentleman are you?
I'm 32 years old.
Do you remember Alex Haley's Roots?
Yes.
Well, I remember watching Roots when I was a boy, and for your listeners who may not be familiar with that, Alex Haley was an author, and he traced his lineage back to Africa. And he wrote a book that was a bestseller, and the ABC picked it up and produced a miniseries that aired in the late 70s, and it was on for a week, and millions of people watched this miniseries, and they were glued to their screens, and they were really seeing what traditional slavery in this country looks like. And I remember being a boy and watching that and thinking that if I lived during that time, I would be an abolitionist. I would be a Frederick Douglass. And I think all of us think that way, that we wouldn't sit back and suffer through those types of injustices, and that we would fight for ourselves, and we would fight for those that can't fight for themselves, and we would speak for those that can't speak for themselves. Well, the problem with that thinking is that I could never prove that to myself, because you're talking about crimes of the past. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, here I was faced with this present-day crime, and I couldn't look my girls in the eyes and walk away from it. So my mom and I started the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation, and our mission is twofold. The obvious is the first part, and that's to carry on the legacies of our great ancestors. And the second part of our mission is to raise awareness about this issue of human trafficking and modern-day slavery. And the way that we go about educating the public is where I think education should start, and that's with young people. My favorite quote of Frederick Douglass's is, "It's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men." So we work with young people. We're a service learning organization. We go into schools that are mostly in economically challenged areas where young girls are most vulnerable to becoming victims of sex trafficking. We talk to young boys about their attitudes towards women and the future choices that they make as adults. If they make the wrong choices, it could feed into the demand side of sex trafficking. And then we put the students to work on projects in their communities, and all of the projects are based around raising awareness about this issue so that they can do exactly what the abolitionists did in the 19th century, and that is to use the communication tools that they have at their disposal to communicate the inhumanity of today's slavery to their communities. If you look at the abolitionists in the 19th century, they used the communication tools that they had at their disposal at the time. They wrote books. They published newspapers. They gave speeches. They passed out leaflets and pamphlets. Well, today's students have the greatest communication tool known to man in the palm of their hands, and the way that they're already communicating with each other on social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter and text messaging, through the stroke of a key, they can reach more people than probably Frederick Douglass could have reached publishing his North Star newspaper. So these students work on these projects in their communities. They get volunteer hours, which can go toward their high school graduation, because in many school districts around the country, high school seniors have to have a certain amount of service hours or community engagement before that they can graduate from high school. So these hours can go toward that. And then because we're talking about students that are facing their own challenges, and we all know that we all face challenges and obstacles that seem sometimes insurmountable to overcome, we can look at the legacies of Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, who were born slaves. It doesn't get any worse than that. And through the power of education, both men were able to overcome insurmountable obstacles to rise up to affect the lives of so many people. And our young people can look at their legacies as tangible examples of being able to do the same thing, overcoming obstacles and overcoming the challenges. And then when they're working on an issue that's greater than they are, and they can see that this issue affects mostly women and children, and that there are millions around the world that are living in conditions as horrific as the slavery that I've been talking about with my ancestors, these young people can look at that, and it empowers them and it lifts them up. And Booker T. Washington said, if you want to lift up yourself, lift up someone else. And our young people are lifting themselves up by working on these issues that are making them better global citizens.
Great, great. And I want to get back. I'm going to ask you more questions about your foundation, and I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about that a little later on. But before I get into that, I just wanted to ask a couple more questions about Frederick Douglass. A couple months ago, I interviewed a gentleman who was doing research on David Ruggles, and I wanted to know if you were familiar with that name, because in that research, it was stated that David Ruggles actually helped assist Frederick Douglass in his escape. I'm not sure if you came across that, or are you familiar with that name at all?
Yeah, I'm definitely familiar with the name and somewhat familiar with the story, although I haven't researched it, but that is a name that I'm familiar with.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to know if you're familiar. Also, I wanted to know what inspired you to earn your PhD. Was it any relationship between your relation to Frederick Douglass or Booker T. Washington? Did this inspire you in any way to obtain your PhD?
No.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, in fact, I have an honorary doctorate that was given to me by the University of Laverne in January of 2012, which I'm really proud of. It's something that, you know, is recognition for the work that we've done at the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation over the past 5 years to continue Frederick Douglass's fight for freedom. So while I did not get a PhD by reading a lot of words in a book, I lived a lot of life and was given this honorary degree, which I'm very proud of.
Oh, okay, great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I also wanted to talk about the relationship between, the very interesting relationship in history between Frederick Douglass and John Brown. And I wanted to discuss, you know, if you're familiar with that relationship between Frederick Douglass and John Brown. And I believe that Frederick Douglass was asked to be the keynote speaker at a Brown celebration. I don't know if you could elaborate more on that relationship. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I spoke at a John Brown Day celebration a couple of weeks ago in Lake Placid, New York, at his farm, which is a National Historic Site. And for your listeners, if they ever are in the area, they should visit the farm. It really is a wonderful piece of history, and there's a lot of information there. And I spoke on the relationship between Douglass and John Brown, and their first meeting took place in 1847, which would have been about 9 years after Frederick Douglass had escaped from slavery. And now by this time, Douglass had written his first autobiography, The Narrative, which became a bestseller, which, by the way, he wrote while he was still a fugitive slave. And the notoriety that the book brought him, he forced him to have to flee to Europe for a couple of years as a cooling off period. When he got to Europe, he befriended some people that were so impressed with this fugitive slave that they pulled their money together and purchased his freedom from his master for $711, and he was able to return back to the United States to continue the work as an abolitionist. And John Brown wrote Frederick Douglass a letter 3 weeks before the raid on Harper's Ferry, and at that, in the letter, he asked if they could get together and they could meet. So they met, and John Brown laid out his plan for what would be the raid on Harper's Ferry. And in that meeting, he tried to convince Douglass to join him. And Frederick Douglass wrote that he used all of his words and effort to try and convince Brown not to do it because he felt that it would be a death trap, that he would be walking in and he and his men would likely be killed. But Douglass said that all of the convincing that he tried to do, he was not able to convince Brown to change his mind, that he was a man that was very determined, very passionate about the cause, and he thought that it was something that America needed, that they needed to be, rattled. They needed to be shaken a little bit. So Douglass said no. He thankfully did not join him, and I said during that speech, thankfully for the family, he did not join him because it's likely that he probably would have been killed as well.
Right, and the lineage would have been affected. That's the point I guess you were making as well, correct?
Well, that's kind of the point that I was making. Fortunately, my great-great-grandfather, Charles, was already born, so it wouldn't have affected the lineage. I would still be here today, but just it would have definitely affected the country if we wouldn't have had the great Frederick Douglass doing the work that he did, and we'd be a very different country today.
Definitely, definitely. And did you have any other speaking engagements? And I just want to make a correction. It was you that were speaking at a John Brown celebration. And how often do you go around the country speaking? And are there any other speaking engagements coming up in the near future?
Yes. I try to get out as much as possible. Any group that would have me, of course, I spend most of my times speaking time in middle schools and high schools around the country. And that takes a good portion of my travel. But I also speak to organizations and lecture at universities. I do have some dates coming up. I'll be in Washington, D.C. the week of June 4th, speaking at a commencement ceremony that will be, it's for a high school, but it will be taking place at Howard University. The week after that, I will be in Chicago speaking for a genealogical society. And then toward the end of the month, I'll be in St. Augustine, Florida, accepting an award for the foundation that will be given to us by the National Underground Railroad Organization. and just found out today that I will be going to Vienna, Austria in October. So we have quite a bit on the calendar, and for anybody that's interested in looking at our event schedule, you can go to fdff.org, which is the acronym for Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. That's fdff.org, and you can keep up with our event schedule and also keep up with the work that we're doing. And for those listeners that use Facebook and Twitter, you can also go to our website and in the top right corner, click on those icons and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Great, great, great. Now, do you have any books or movies or plays, things that you would like to recommend that will, further your cause and further, I guess, knowledge of Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington? Are there any suggestions or books, things you would recommend for the public?
Well, what I would recommend for people to do is to take a look at what we're doing in schools and our service learning curricula. We're going to be starting a program this fall in New York City Public Schools. We're working with Mayor Bloomberg's office to bring our service learning curricula, which is called History, Human Rights, and the Power of One, to New York City Public Schools. We'll start with targeted schools, and because within the school district there are more than 1,700 schools, which represent more than 1.1 million students. So we'll start with targeted schools, and we'll determine what schools those are by, the young girls that are most vulnerable, in the areas where we feel that we can make a difference. There was a recent article that was published in the New York Daily News a few weeks ago that stated that schoolyards are a hotbed for human traffickers to traffic young girls starting at age 10, 11, 12 years old. So there is a need for this type of preventative education in schools. So I would recommend that your listeners check out what we're doing. Again, they can go to our website. They can click on our education tab, and then they can download a copy of the service learning curricula. If any of your listeners are teachers or administrators, I recommend that you implement this within your schools because for all of the reasons that I mentioned earlier. And we can also use resources. We can use donations for the work that we're doing. So if any of the listeners have the wherewithal to donate to the work that we're doing, you can do that on our website. We also have a need for volunteers. So if this is an issue that you feel is an outrage and that you'd like to lend your voice or your passion or your talents or your financial resources to help us with this cause, please do so and visit our website. As far as books are concerned, we're working on a book. I'm not sure how far down the road that is. We still have a lot of work to do in schools, so that's not a top priority for us right now. There is one other event that I would like to mention that is happening in Southern California in Rancho Cucamonga this Saturday, May 19th. It's a modern-day slavery art exhibit, and I will be speaking at that exhibit, and there'll be 30 compelling images showing what slavery looks like today, the face of slavery. There's a very talented photographer that became very interested in this cause, and he's using his talents to raise awareness and show what slavery looks like today. And if you're in Southern California, it'll be in Rancho Cucamonga. And for more information on that, you can go to stephenjamescollins.com. So that will be May 19th at 7:30 this Saturday.
Great. Thank you for that. And just for our listeners who may not be as familiar with Frederick Douglass or familiar with Booker T. Washington, do you have maybe any readings that they could go to, or maybe any readings that they could, if they wanted to go and pick up tonight, that they could, look up and start reading in order to get a sense of who these men and how important these men were in American history and African-American history?
Absolutely. For Frederick Douglass, I would start with his narrative, which I talked about, that was published in 1845, The Narrative of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave. That is a book that should be required reading in schools all across the country. It's a classic, and it's something that in my travels I've had young people and adults come up to me with tears in their eyes, how that book moved them, and it really changed their lives. And Frederick Douglass was a very talented and gifted writer and communicator, so I would start with that book. and then for Booker T. Washington, start with his autobiography, Up From Slavery. And again, it's an inspiring book. It talks about his philosophy. It talks about his life as a slave, about Tuskegee. And Tuskegee University is one of the leading institutions for educating African Americans in this country, and there have been millions of students and families that have been educated, so his legacy lives on in Tuskegee University. So those are the two books that I would start with, and from there, I'm sure that your listeners will be inspired to go out and search for other books, because there is a lot of information out there on both men.
Great, great, great. Now I have a quick question. I remember as I grew up and took more Black history courses, I've always seen, I have seen Frederick Douglass's name spelled two different ways, and in particular the Douglass. I've seen it with the S left off, the last S left off, and I've also seen it with two S's. So just for clarification, are there two S's on his last name, or is it one S?
There are two S's on his name, so if you see it with one S, it's spelled incorrectly.
Okay.
As I mentioned, he was born Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey. He changed his name to Frederick Douglass, and he added a second S to it. So that's the name that he chose for himself. So I think that people should be respectful of that and spell it correctly.
Right.
And I've also seen his first name spelled incorrectly, too. It should be Frederick.
Great, great, great. We thank you for that. And I just want to ask one last question about the foundation and just, I guess, the uniqueness in your fight. I know you were mentioning earlier how the life of Frederick Douglass and the life of Booker T. Washington and their platform, how it inspired you to take up this current fight. But I wanted to speak to you in your reality, the global reality of your fight, in the sense that, you know, Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass, they were dealing with the issue of slavery and the issue of equality here in America. But your fight, in a sense, goes beyond the American shore. So I guess how does that affect your particular fight? Because it goes beyond the United States.
Right. It's an issue that affects every race in the human family now. It's not just an issue like the slavery with which we're most familiar with here in the United States, which was state-sanctioned, it was legalized, and it affected African Americans. Today, slavery is all over the world, and it affects every race in the human family. And most of its victims, and there are millions that are enslaved around the world, and 80% of the victims are women and 50% are children. So it is a global fight. It's a worldwide issue that, you know, it seems like it is insurmountable to overcome, but just like with anything, awareness is the key. And experts really believe that if we can spread awareness or raise awareness about this issue, and by the way, in the past 4 years that I've been working on this issue, I've seen the awareness level raised quite a bit, and of course we have a long way to go. But when you raise awareness, people become outraged, and they become hopefully passionate, and they'll do the things that they need to do to affect change. And so that's something that we work on. And I hope I'm on a phone here, and it sounds like my battery might be running. I don't know if you can still get me.
Yeah, I still hear you. I still hear you. And just want to ask you, we have just a couple more questions, so hopefully you'll be all right. I just want to know, for our listeners, we encourage our listeners to continue to obtain knowledge, to continue to obtain education. So when our guests come, we tend to ask them, you know, any favorite museums, monuments, libraries, any places in particular that are favorite of yours, where favorite areas of learning, so we can encourage our listeners to also a patron and be a part of these sites.
Yes, the Frederick Douglass National Historic Site. The Frederick Douglass National Historic Site, which is in Washington, D.C., it's where he spent the last 17 years of his life. That is a place that I would definitely recommend that when people are visiting Washington, they go and check that out. And then, of course, Tuskegee University in Tuskegee, Alabama, is a great place to learn about Booker T. Washington's life story. So, yes, please visit those places if you have the opportunity.
Great. And just one more time before you leave us for this evening, if you can just let us know your contact information.
Yes. Again, visit us online at fdff.org, and from there you can connect with us through Facebook and through Twitter, and also on the the Contact Us tab, you can reach us by email, and you'll also see a phone number. So that's the best way to get a hold of us. Also, if you have any listeners that may be interested in learning more about this issue of human trafficking, or they know somebody in their lives or their communities that this might be affecting, there's a national hotline that I'd like to give out, and perhaps you can publish that on your website so that people have access to it. And that number, it's a toll-free number. It's 888-3737-888. And that would be a great resource if people think that there might be somebody in their community that is being affected by this issue. And that's a national hotline that's run by Polaris Project, which is an organization out of Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much. And again, I thank you, Dr. Morris, for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come on the Gist of Freedom and share with our listeners your story and the work that you're doing. And I know you stated earlier that you have, you just found out about it, an engagement that you have on May 19th. And I just wanted to, May 19th is a special day and a unique day in the sense that it would be Malcolm X's 87th birthday on May 19th. And I know many things are going on around the country, especially amongst the African-American communities on that day. And I just wanted to ask if you have any thoughts, any comments about that particular day, Malcolm X, and you know, perhaps the legacy also that continues from Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, all the way down, Malcolm X, and how we all have a responsibility to even uphold these names. So just any comments, any feelings about Malcolm X and his birthday, which is coming up on the 19th?
Yes, and that's a good point. When I travel around the country and I talk to young people, they've all heard of Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Malcolm X, and the other great leaders of the civil rights movement. And when I ask them, how many of you have heard of Frederick Douglass and Booker T. Washington, not a lot of hands go up. And it's important that our young people know that the fight for freedom and for civil rights started long before these heroes that I just mentioned. And Frederick Douglass was known as the father of the civil rights movement, and there are so many people. We all don't descend from a Douglass or a Washington or somebody that's famous that we've heard of, but each and every one of us descends from somebody that made a difference in this country of ours. And if we were to all go back and look at our family tree, we would find great heroes and sheroes that sacrificed so much, that may have even given of their lives, just so that we can enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy today, and for some of us, just so that we have the right to sit in a classroom and get an education. So it's important that we know our own family stories, and I truly believe that our young people that are having issues and facing challenges and maybe having troubles or at-risk youth, that we all want to feel that we come from somebody. And I always like to say that we need to know where we've come from in order to know where we're going. So we can't understate the importance of knowing our own family legacies. And I think that if our young people would go back and they would talk to their grandparents or their great-grandparents if they're still alive and get this information and have this information passed down to them, they would realize that they stand on the shoulders of those that came before them, and they would be walking in the shoes of their ancestors. And I truly believe that they have this information at an age when they're forming their identities and the character of who they're going to become. You can see a big difference, and I've seen change in young people having this information. And I see that they have more respect for themselves, they have more respect for their peers, and they certainly don't want to disrespect those that came before them. So I think that any time there is an anniversary of a birthday of one of our great heroes, it should be a time of reflecting on our own family stories and learning about those that came before us that sacrificed so much, and remembering those people.
Great, great. Thank you for that. And again, Dr. Morris, we thank you again for your time. We thank you for taking time out and sharing with our listeners about your story, about your lineage, and the work that you're doing. So, again, thank you for your time, and I look forward to continuing dialogue with you and getting another chance to talk to you again in the near future. Thank you again.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. And for our listeners, Gist of Freedom, I just wanted to remind you that Malcolm X's daughter, Ilyasa Shabazz, the author of Growing Up X, will be on the Gist of Freedom in celebration of Malcolm X's birthday this Saturday, May 19th at 8 a.m. in the morning. So please tune in to the Gist of Freedom at 8 a.m. on May 19th, where Malcolm X's daughter, Ilyasa Shabazz, the author of Growing Up X, will be the guest. Again, everyone, thank you for listening, and have a great night. Until next time, God bless.
Thank Hello? You. I appreciate it.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. This is Trudy Coleman. Is Mr. Douglas still on? He's gone.
Hey, Trudy. How are you? It's Ken Morris.
Hi, Ken.
How did I get connected to you?
Well, I just happened to get on the computer and saw that you were going to be online.
Well, did you hear the interview?
Yeah, I heard just the last 15 minutes just now.
Well, let me call you offline here so we can talk.
All right.
Okay.
We're still online. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hello?